I've been going through the different names of Jesus. I'm enjoying the study. As you study the name and just these different aspects of looking at who Jesus is, and it just kind of opens up each spot. It's like a bud or something there, and then as you study it, it just kind of opens up that, wow, look at what that part he's done, and look at that, and it's amazing to me, as I've mentioned multiple times here, and will one more time, just in the aspect of what regeneration is. It's told to us in the scriptures in many different aspects. It's the new man. It's a new creature. It's the washing. It's regeneration. It's being born again. And all those gives us a looks at it a little different and gives us a better understanding maybe or to grasp what is that new thing within you when you're born again or the washed, whatever. Well, when we get to Jesus, and I come across a list that somebody had compiled of all the names of Jesus through the scriptures, and I didn't count. Since I've just thought of it, but it seems like there's like 30 or so, 30 different or however, a bunch of different, we'll just say a bunch of different names of Jesus. And all of these titles, these names, give us a little different reference of who he is. And so nonetheless, today I've talked about the branch. I've talked here also about the everlasting Father. I've talked about the Prince of Peace, just not here. Maybe I will, maybe I won't. I don't know. We'll see what happens in the future. But out of Isaiah 9:6, it's very clear what's happening here. And we'll just read this verse quick that Isaiah wrote down. For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulder, and his name shall be called Wonderful, Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. So right there we have five different names of Jesus Christ, five different aspects of looking at who he is. It's interesting, as I did the study, and I think I mentioned a few weeks ago about the aspect of a Wonderful, comma, Counselor, comma, Everlasting, or the Mighty God, comma, the Everlasting Father, comma, and the Prince of Peace, period. Even John Gill mentioned that some people put Wonderful and Counselor together. But there is a comma there. Commas are, I think, quite important in the scriptures. My understanding is the punctuation like this wasn't in some of the original languages, but in translation to try to get the sense thereof correctly, it was put in because we use punctuation in our language. And I'll just, as much as the scriptures were inspired by men to be written, I believe also that just as big a miracle is that they're preserved unto us to this day, and even through a translation aspect. So there's a comma there. As I looked for other men that not, you know, just get you YouTube and ask them to talk about this, I only found two sermons out of, I don't know, 30, 40 sermons that YouTube brought up about this that had it broke as Wonderful and Counselor. All the others was Wonderful Counselor. Well, it does change what's going on if you just look as he is Wonderful and he is Counselor. If he's a Wonderful Counselor, Wonderful is just identifying what kind of counselor he is, if you see what I'm saying. But Wonderful, comma, there's something there. And his name shall be called Wonderful. I just want to stop right there. I think that's great. Let's take a look at his name being called Wonderful. Well, you know, kind of in an academic sense, maybe we need to know what wonderful means. I think we all use the word a lot. I use it quite sarcastically. You know, something kind of on the negative side happens, and I will say, oh, wonderful. You know, that's just great. Really, when I say great, that's what, if you look up, some dictionaries put that as the first meaning. It's just great. Some dictionaries then go ahead and say what wonderful is and that it's marvelous. Or Brother Marty used the word a couple of times earlier, incredible. It's a bigger picture than just great. And there's sometimes I'll use it correctly, I mean, in our vocabulary today. And somebody says something good about something and I go, oh, wonderful. But I'm meaning great. Well, if we back it up to when this the scriptures were written or were translated, and we go back to that time, this word wonderful had been in use already for a few hundred years. It gets its roots out of the English language, and it's not hard to figure out what it really means. If you look at the word, it means full of wonder. That's pretty tough. And they say, wonderful, full of wonder. But that's still in my mind. I'm still thinking kind of in a great sense. So synonyms would be incredible, marvelous, and extraordinary. Marvelous is the one I like. Marvelous is that you just marvel at something. I think that's what we're getting at. Or it's just incredible. It's just like your mind is just like it's never really wrapped itself around this particular thought or idea. And his name shall be called wonderful. And his name shall be called full of wonder, marvelous. Isn't that? I want to try to instill that more into our minds. So I think about, well, what's wonderful or marvelous to me? And I can go real quick kind of into two categories, just in a natural sense and then in a spiritual sense. So I think of things that are full of wonder to me or marvelous just around here. I would imagine if I ask all of you, you'd have different things that just make you just kind of go, oh, wow, what, that's amazing. You know, I grew up in Nebraska, and where I grew up, there were trees, but the wind blows all the time, and trees are not straight in Nebraska. In fact, in some areas, if it's out on a hillside by itself, it'll lean a little bit to the northwest, because the wind's typically the northeast, because the wind's typically out of the southwest, but it blows every which direction. It's like somebody said one time that was told a traveler in Nebraska, does the wind always blow this way? And the Nebraskan said, well, no, sometimes it blows from the other way. And it's just, so trees are just crooked out there. And so what's marvelous to me is when I moved to the southeast, and there's these straight, tall trees, I still amaze. At first, I haven't done it for several years, but I get out in a grove where it's just thick with pine needles underneath or pine straw, and there's just not weeds, and just lay down. It's just like straight. And if you take your eyes and look, you can just see they're just all straight. And if there's a building over there, I assume guys build the building, you know, with a plumb bob of some sort, so it's straight with the world, as we'd say. And you kind of eyeball, and you can see the side of the building and the tree straight up and down. That's just wild to me how straight trees are. Most of you are like, well, that's a dumb thing to be wonderful of wonder about. Another thing, I've talked about it here, that they now estimate, scientists do, or Google tells me they do, I'll trust this part of it anyway, that there's 60 billion trillion stars. I didn't understand what that meant. Marty explained it to me. So you count the first trillion. You have 1 trillion stars. You have 2 trillion stars. You have 3 trillion stars as you keep counting. And you get up to 60 billion trillion stars. That's a lot of stars, folks. That's a handiwork of God. We read in 1 John that Jesus was there in creation. There was nothing made that was made but without him. He's there. He's full of wonder. And all of those stars, just the finger work, 60 billion trillion stars. That's extraordinary to me. I marvel at that idea. Well, what else? The Grand Canyon. Only time I've seen the Grand Canyon's 1969. I was 13 years old, but I just remember walking up to that edge. I'm like, whoa, this is a canyon. You know what I mean? Just the marvel of it. It was marvelous to me. It was full of wonder just to see that crack in the ground, you know, a mile down or deeper and a mile across. I even remember taking a good-sized rock. Now, they probably won't let you do that nowadays, but I wanted to see how many seconds I could chunk that rock out, and it went out of sight. Of course, Dickie's there, and he's timing it as we try to walk. Anyway, what's marvelous to you? I mean, what in your mind when you think of something? What's full of wonder to you? I'm sure we all have different aspects and things of it, but just think of some of those things that would be. And then we get to, of course, Jesus. His name shall be called Wonderful. Marvelous is what I'm going to use. Full of wonder. Well, you know, Solomon had some of this thought. Maybe I get a little ahead of myself or miss this, but we'll just go back to Proverbs. Just back up several pages to Proverbs 30 and verse 18 and 19. Solomon had some things that he marveled at. They were just wonderful to him, full of wonder to Solomon. He says, there be three things which are too wonderful for me. He's saying there's three things that just like, he said, I just can't comprehend it. It's just full of wonder. It's too big for me to get. And he said, the way of an eagle in the air, just how they soar. I remember watching eagles, you know, especially on windy days. They don't even flap their wings sometimes. It's just, they're soaring. How do they do that? Well, I know science can come and tell us how the where the air is divided on the front edge of the wing, and it takes longer for it to go over the top than underneath, and that creates lift, and you can explain that away. But when you see most birds, it's flutter, 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 wherever they're going. But here's the eagle, just soaring, riding on those currents. They tell me, and people that do different types of hang gliding and things, you look for fields that are not planted, that there is dirt, and there's much more heat generated in the daytime with the sun shining on that dirt, and there's heat rising, and there's currents of heat going up, and those eagles can fly over those heat rising, and they can gain elevation, and then they can just keep, you know, coasting or soaring as they go along. Solomon said, that's just full of wonder to me. How that the eagle can fly like that in the air. And then he said, the way of a serpent upon a rock. Serpents have no legs. And here they are on a rock. There's really, how do they move? How do they get it done? How do they go? That was, you know, something that to Solomon was just strange to him. But it was full of wonder that they can so quickly move. I'm out in the woods a lot, and we see snakes from time to time, and I like the ones that notice I'm there, and they turn and go quickly. That's my favorite ones. There's some that just hang out and want to see what you're going to do. Of course, I hang out to see what they're going to do, and we wait. Sometimes if they hang too long and I recognized it's a poisonous variety, then I ease on over to my truck and get, you know, my gun, and we're going to fix this situation, shall we say. But Solomon's like, it's just marvelous to me. It's full of marvel, the way of a snake upon a rock. And he also says, the way of a ship in the midst of the sea. This one I can understand a little bit, too. Especially those old wooden, what do you call them, galley ships, the wooden ships like Columbus sailed in, and they've got their rudder underneath and all of those big sails on top, and they turn them whichever, doesn't matter which way the wind's blowing, they know how to turn those sails to get the ship to go where they want to go. It's marvelous to me. How does that happen? that they can figure out how to do. I could say, once again, you can go back to science and say, well, if the pressure's this way and the wind's this way and there's so much wind slipping off the sail that way and the rudder, and it's just amazing to me to see that. We don't see a lot of that nowadays. I did, I don't watch much Olympics anymore, but we happened to, I guess it was a year ago now that they had the Olympics. Don't even remember where they were at. But we happened to turn it on at the time. There's these little one-man sailboats, one guy in a little old sailboat, and there must have been 40 or 50 of those guys over here, and there were certain points they had to go out and go around and come back to the finish line. And it's just amazing to me to watch those guys, and they lean way out and pulling on that sail, but as they'd go around the point, then the wind's directions changed, and they have to know how to compensate. It's just fascinating to me, full of wonder. And then he says this is interesting to me, and the way of a man with a maid. I assume that's kind of the dating or the courtship process, how a guy can work his magic with a woman. That was a wonder to him. It's probably a wonder to the woman too, but I don't know. I won't go any farther with that idea. But you see the idea that is just full of wonder. It's marvelous. It's incredible, these different aspects. Jesus and his name shall be called Wonderful. His name shall be full of wonder. Have you thought of what Jesus has done and what's marvelous to you about it? What's full of wonder? Does it roll over in your head like you might have a peppermint candy in your mouth and you just keep rolling it over, enjoying it? Do you think of things that are marvelous that Jesus has done? I think we ought to. His name shall be Wonderful. What is it about Jesus maybe that you go over? I think about things that are so marvelous or so incredible or full of wonder that Jesus has done. The first, I just have to keep going back and back and back, and I get to before the foundation of the world. I can't go farther back. Here was the three, Father, God the Father, God the Son, God the Holy Spirit, and they went into covenant. They chose a people that they knew were sinners. And they set into progress or into motion this thing of salvation. And Jesus in that is I see it kind of in the aspect of this testament and the will that they're writing, the covenant, the legal parts of it. And God the Father said he'd do his part. And they're in the council room or the courtroom or the office of the lawyer, whatever, like I've been in when we made a will. And this different speculations or the different responses of the ones, but there's Jesus. And in some sense, he was saying, I'll trade my righteousness with their unrighteousness. How many of us is going to take somebody that's just a bum in the street or in the gutter? Let's get a little more vivid in our minds. And you're going to trade with them all of your goodness. And you're going to trade it with them. You're going to take all of their guttural bumness onto yourself. Wow. Jesus said, I'll do it. Before the foundation of the world. He said, I will do this. And it's not for one person. It's for the elect. Millions, billions of people taking their wonder. I mean, that's marvelous, is it not? It's unreal to think he was willing to do that. The Godhead was completely self-sufficient within itself. They didn't need us. They don't need people. They don't need any of that. And yet, somehow within who they are and that they are love. And love typically has you, real love has you to the desire to do something for somebody else. And true love doesn't do something for somebody expecting to get something back. What you're doing is putting somebody, yourself or them, under some kind of a law. Well, if I do this and they do that, and you see it leads to a point. But true love is you just do it because you love them. And if they turn and rend you, it's okay. Because you still did it out of love for the individual. And that's just, well, here's Jesus. I'll go and do this. Father, I'll go. The idea of incarnation. Jesus became a man. Here's God himself. And being in the womb of Mary and being born, going through this earthly process, the God of the universe, that we, you know, here I've jumped from before the foundation of the world to when he came into the world. Well, we missed a whole bunch. He was in creation. Nothing was made but was made without him. And we talked about 60 billion trillion stars. There he is. That's just, you know, what makes you full of wonder of Jesus Christ? Do any of these things? They say that there's something like 300 to 700 prophecies of Jesus in the Old Testament. Jesus, you know, made sure that when he was hanging on the cross, that all of the prophecies were fulfilled. All of them. The probabilities of that happen is just off the chart. That it can't happen, really, if man were doing it. But we're talking about God. The you know, think of those things. What about the three Hebrew children in the fiery furnace? And who was, when Nebuchadnezzar, the old wicked king, looked in there, and he saw a fourth one, and who did it look like? It was the Son of God, the Son of Man. Here he is. And he's born into this world, as we were just talking about. I mean, just marvelous things to marvel at. I marvel at going back to those Hebrew children. There they were in a furnace that was heated 7 times hotter than it ought to be. I don't think they had thermometers back then, but somehow they knew that it was a lot hotter than it's supposed to be. It was so hot that the men that threw them in the furnace door got burned up. That's how hot it was. And yet these guys got in there and it burned the ropes. They were bound off of their arms and feet, I guess. In hot coals. I mean, a hot furnace. It's so hot that just the heat coming out. Have y'all ever had something in the oven and you open the oven door with your face too close to start not let that heat? It's usually the steam kind of. I've burned my eyes. I mean, not literally, but it's just like, oh, that hurt. This oven was so hot when that heat came out, it just killed a bunch of men. They're just dead, burned up. And yet these guys go in there. And there's nothing. And here's Jesus walking with them. Another miracle that happened is Nebuchadnezzar walked over and looked in there and saw it. Why didn't he get burned up like the guys laying there on the ground that threw him in? You know? Just the wonder of it. The how incredible this was. And then when they come out, it said there wasn't even the smell of smoke on them. Now, that's a pretty big wonder, too. Some of us guys in here like to smoke meat. Brother Sam gave me some smoked cheese. Smoke penetrates. It's not like if you marinate something, you got to let that sit on that meat for a while. I used to deliver milk for a very short period of time. Horrible job. I suggest nobody do it. But it does pay bills, so that's why I did it. And one of the restaurants I went to was a specialty kind of a chicken place, chicken fingers and things. And they had several different flavors of chicken fingers, boneless. And they marinated them in different types of milk products. And I'd deliver the milk, of course, put it in the walk-in cooler. They had 5-gallon buckets stacked to the ceiling of this thing and the names on it and the dates. And they let that marinate for days and days, trying to get the flavor into the meat. But you put meat in a smoker, it doesn't take but a few hours, and it's smoked right on through. Smoke penetrates. And here these folks came out, no smell of smoke. I mean, it's just a wonder. And here's Jesus Christ in with them, a pre-incarnate time that Jesus was definitely seen. What else would there be? His miracles. Maybe the miracles are something that's just like astounding to you. The one group of miracles he did was raising the dead. That really kind of amazes me to think of him at Lazarus' tomb. And they're like, Jesus, we don't even want to roll the door away. You know, it's the fourth day, and by now he stinketh. He's decomposing. And Jesus still says to go ahead and do it. And he raised him from the dead. I'm assuming that the stench in the air went away too when he was brought back. I don't know. I don't know how all that works. Again, science could probably help us with some of that. But anyway, I won't go any farther with that. That can get kind of yuck. But just the marvel of it. Here's a woman that's a widow. So she has no husband to provide for her. She has one son, and he died. And they're in a funeral procession, and there are folks out in front wailing, crying. And here she is. And I'm sure in her mind it's like, I don't know how I'm going to make my living. I have no idea how this is going to work. And Jesus comes along and raises the boy back to life. I think how that changed that funeral procession from all the sadness to what, and in her heart, can you imagine the joy? The wonder of it, just the wonder of what Jesus has done. Maybe some of the others, maybe, you know, folks were a little amazed that he could, his first miracle, could turn all these pots full of water into wine. And it was the best wine that we find out. What other miracles? What miracles that you just like, how? You know, it's just incredible in your thinking. What about the aspect that from when he was in the covenant, and not only was he, would he be willing of what we call imputation and give us his righteousness, take on our unrighteousness, and then for him to hang on the cross, and God poured out his wrath on him. And the wrath that was being poured out because it was our unrighteousness on him. There had been an exchange. It was God pouring his wrath out that was supposed to be the wrath toward us. And a wrath we couldn't bear. A wrath that would send us to the lake of fire forever. The wrath of God is going to be on the lake of fire forever. The folks that are in, and the devil and his angels are going to be under the wrath of God forever. And that's where we would have been forever. Because we could have never paid, is the expression, to where that there was enough suffering to that God says that satisfies my justice. That, you know, a crime's committed and maybe somebody says, well, you need to serve 10 years in prison. And that pays for the crime that you committed. We could never pay for the crime. The justice of God was being poured out. And forever and never would we have finally got to where God said, you've paid your sacrifice or your debt to society. Never could happen. And yet Jesus took it ours onto him, and he could survive that. He was God, and he was able to pay or suffer the vengeance of God that was on us. Really? I mean, that's just, in three, you know, I consider it, I don't know exactly how it is. In my mind, it was like the 3 hours of darkness when God's wrath was there. I realize it also includes his death and his burial and his resurrection. I'm not trying to just parse it so closely, but seems to me like that was just that intense time when he was there like that. And him crying out, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? That's when it just seems like, there God is pouring out his wrath, and it was supposed to be on me. Marvelous, incredible, full of wonder, and his name shall be called Wonderful. Going back to to be an incarnate God, I mean, coming to earth, I've used the idea of what that disparity is between God and man, and it's infinite disparity. I mean, there's just no real way for us in our minds to grasp how high God is, how righteous God is. And there's no way for us to really grasp how unrighteous we are without God. We live amongst ourselves, and we get to looking at somebody else and says, well, now, you know, I don't skip stop signs, and I saw that guy do that. And I, you know, I don't smoke, and that guy does that. And I don't cuss, and that guy, you know. And we start building ourselves up because we see ourselves better than those. We're judging ourselves with ourselves. Scripture specifically says don't do that because we're all sinners. Yeah, maybe somebody is a little bit better than you in this category, but I guarantee you, or maybe you're a little bit better than him is what I meant to say, but I guarantee you there's categories in your life that you're failing at and others are better than you. There is no question about it. So don't just kind of get the blinders on. You know, horses, I've never, you know, driven horses, but seen it, you know, real life in Nebraska. They put blinders on them so the horses aren't distracted by other things and they'll keep more focused on what's going on. We put blinders on so we don't see the of our own selves, looking at ourselves, we don't see how nasty we really are. We got our blinders on. We're just looking at the good stuff so we can feel better about ourselves. Well, I'm not that big a sinner. And don't tell me you don't do that. I'm sorry, but we all are sinners, and we all have dark sides that we like to hide. I remember somebody saying one time, I was talking about how I was and trying to, you know, put on a good side, and the preacher was there and said, well, that's okay. We all know who you are anyway. So you're not hiding anything from us. You're just hiding it from yourself. Well, that's a real good way to build somebody up. But it's the way it is, you know. But the disparity. Now, I've used it here before, and I know you all think it's a stupid thing. But it just helps me. The wonder of it helps me. That you look at some creature on earth that's nasty, and I took the cockroach, and here I am. And there's a disparity between humans and cockroaches. And so I tried to make the example as, what if I'm the God of the cockroaches, you know, as the point of God over people. Now we got the superior over the inferior, of man over cockroaches. And there was a world of cockroaches that I loved. And I wanted to save those cockroaches. And I was willing to be incarnate, leave the world that I'm in, and go be a cockroach and live in their filthiness. Some of you are kind of, well, think about it, what Jesus Christ did. You know, cockroaches live in their own filth. They raise their young in their own filth. Do you realize we, in a spiritual sense, live in our own filth and raise our young in our own filth? That's how we are, in a spiritual sense. And Jesus came to this world as a human and lived in human filth. Would you be willing, in such a small step, from us to a cockroach instead of from God to man, just a small step for us compared to what he did, and become a cockroach and go live with him? I don't love cockroaches that much, folks. You see what I'm saying? Think of the wonder of him doing that. That's just marvelous. And now he's gone back to heaven. He died. Whatever that separation was, his soul, his spirit was not in his body. I don't know what that all entails. And then it came back, and he came back to life. The resurrection of Jesus Christ that proves that who he is, the first man to take up his own life. Here he is. He's God. And now he dwells in perfect righteousness, and we are in the hope of living with him in righteousness one day. And he went back to heaven. And what's he doing now? He's mediator between God and man. He's the one that we pray to. You know, in the Old Testament, regular folks couldn't talk to God. They couldn't go to God and say, my heart's aching, or I have this problem. They had to go to the temple and talk to the priest. And then the priest would go and talk to God, or take the sacrifice and sacrifice it unto God. You weren't able to go to God directly yourself. But that old stuff's been laid out of the way. And Jesus is our high priest. He is God, and we are kings and priests unto God, and we are able as priests to God, that when we have an ache, a burden, a something within us that just just is in our hearts of a problem, maybe for somebody else that you love, you can go directly to God. I was sitting with my dad one night, the last night he was on earth. And it just seemed to me like there was moments through that night. My daddy was a very godly man. And I'll never, in my thinking, ever get near who he was as a godly man. And there we were that night. And it just seemed like from time to time, Jesus was in the room with us. It just, you could just feel it in my thinking. And as I sit there and my mind starts thinking about, wow, here I am, Daddy's dying, and the Lord is here with us. And then I thought, you know, there's somebody else on planet Earth dying right now too. Got to be. All the different people. So I Googled it. I don't know how men come up with the statistics, and maybe it's, what do they say, 80% of all statistics are made up on the spot. Maybe this is one of those times. I don't know. I Googled it. I don't trust Google for a lot of stuff. It said that there's approximately one person dying every 7 seconds on planet Earth. And yet I felt like Jesus is in the room with us for hours. And how can he be with all those other folks? I don't think that my dad was the only godly man dying at that point. You know what I mean? There had to be other godly men with their families there feeling Jesus is in the room with them at the same time. I felt we said, Brother Charlie, it seemed as the Lord was there. Isn't that not right, Sister Ann? Yeah, he was there. And yet there's other families experiencing the same thing. Marvel, how does Jesus do that? He's me. When you get to where you just don't know what to do, where you're going, you can't even pray. It's so, you don't know the words. It says that the Holy Spirit that lives within you takes that and makes words out of it, and it takes it to the mediator. How many times a second is that happening to Jesus Christ right now? You're not the only one that's heart's aching. Think of the wonder of how many thousands and thousands or maybe millions of cases that are going to Jesus' mediation between God and man at this very moment, right now. Not just whatever pain or suffering or your concern for somebody else is at the moment. What about his triumphal return? I mean, he's going to come back with all the souls that have already died and passed on, your loved ones that's died and passed on, and you stood by the grave of their body, but they weren't there. Their souls are in heaven with Jesus. And he's coming back one day, and all of those souls are going to be with him. How do you explain that? How do you even get a vision of that in your head? You know, they said that Jesus went up into the cloud, and the men in white raiment said, "Ye men of Galilee, why stand ye gazing upward? This same Jesus return in like manner." Well, typically, whenever I hear the word cloud or think of the word cloud, I just think of a physical, what we call cloud, of white, puffy, or black, threatening, whatever, but a cloud, all right? What is a cloud? A cloud is a bunch of little tiny droplets of moisture. That's all it is. And you put a bunch together, that's a cloud. Do you know in Hebrews 11, it talks about all the different souls or men and women of faith. And it gets down to the end, and it says something, the aspect of we are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses. There are so many people that's lived and walked by faith. And in the book, 11th chapter of Hebrews, it gives us a picture of them. And it says there's so many people that's lived by faith that it's a cloud of them. Jesus was lifted up into a cloud. I used to think it was a cloud of moisture droplets. I think maybe now it was a cloud of souls. You see what I'm saying? Or maybe it was a cloud of angels. And he's going to come back in like manner. When he's coming back, I know there will be multiplied millions of souls coming back with him. And he's going to shout, And I think the shout is going to be all of the names in the book of life, of all the people, the Lamb's Book of Life. And it's going to sound like a shout, but everybody's name will be said at the same time. You know, everybody in here has a name, but I can't say all of y'all's name at the same time. Jesus can. What a marvel. And maybe that shout is just him calling all of our names at the same time. And all of those dead souls, their bodies are coming back to life like Lazarus. And all of those souls are going back. Do you see the marvel in that? Is that not marvel? Is that wild? Of all of our loved ones. And ones that were their loved ones and ones that was their loved ones. And right on back to Adam. Here we go, all the way back. What a marvel. Well, and his name shall be called Wonderful. I'm kind of glad that I stopped at that comma. Because this idea of just seeing, and it's such a little glimpse of him being wonderful. But here he is, wonderful. Well, David kind of thought about that. If you'll go to Psalms 40. Psalms 40, verse 5. David says, "Many, O Lord, my God, are thy wonderful works which thou hast done, and thy thoughts which are to usward. They cannot be reckoned up in order unto thee. If I would declare and speak of them, they are more than can be numbered." He's talking about the works of God. I just was listing some of the works of Jesus Christ. Of before the foundation of the world, in the everlasting covenant, of creation, of him with the children of, you know, one of the miracles in the Old Testament of him being in the fiery furnace, and talking about his natural incarnation aspect and some of the miracles he did in his death on the cross, and how he's mediator with us now, and then to that last great day. Talked about from eternity to eternity on just different quick aspects of him. And David said, "Many, O Lord, are thy wonderful works which thou hast done." Many. I mean, it's just, John said, if all the miracles he did were written in books, the world itself could not contain how many that he's done. And here's his wonderful works in display. They're displayed here. The wonderfulness of God and of Jesus Christ. And he said, even his thoughts to us. Just his thoughts. Taking away just all the stuff that he's done with others and all. Just the thoughts of us. The thoughts of David. The thoughts of each one of you. Jesus thinks about you. Did you know that? He thinks about you. How much does he think about you? Well, it says they can't even be reckoned up in order. In other words, they can't be counted in order. You can't do it. There's so much going on, you can't do it. Why can't you do it? You don't know all the different ones that's going on. There's ones you'll never see, never know, never understand that's being done on specifically your behalf. And this just can't be reckoned. That's a Southern term we say. No, that's a Bible term. All right, the Southerners picked it up, maybe because it was the Bible Belt. I don't know. But it can't be counted. It can't be done. Can't be counted in order. And it goes on to say, if I would declare and speak of them, all these wonderful, wondrous, marvelous, incredible, full of wonder works that's been done to me. David's talking about himself. I'll take it as I'm reading it. If I would declare and speak of them, they are more than can be numbered. Did you know God thought about you and does stuff for you more than can be numbered? That's what the book says. Jesus, and his name shall be called full of wonder. His name shall be called Wonderful. God bless you all.